The following is a home program given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Das Adhikari, recorded on December 20th, 2009, in Blacktown, Australia.
Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Jata Parakamalam Sri Guru Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupa Sangra Jata Sahagana Raghunatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadaitam Zavadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Deva Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakan Vitamscha. So, as we were coming to this program today, we passed through downtown Sydney. And there we saw one bus. Hop on, hop off. With an observation deck on the top. For $35, you can see 30 sights of Sydney. So I was thinking, I started looking out the window to see what are the sights of Sydney. But I was thinking, what is there here that's worth seeing? Is there anything in Sydney that I can see that will grant me immortality? We went over the bridge and there was the famous Sydney Opera House. So does Sydney Opera House Darshan give me immortality? No. So what is worth seeing? If something can give immortality, if something can grant me immortality, that is worth seeing. But what I can see here, hop on, hop off, $35. What I can see here that will give me immortality, that will free me from all material distress, is there anything in Sydney I can see? And then I thought, yes, ISKCON North Sydney, Sri Sri Radha Gopinath. By that darshan, Sri Sri Radha Gopinath, if you can go to the ISKCON temple in North Sydney and you can bow down before Sri Sri Radha Gopinath and you can gaze upon those beautiful lords with love in your heart, if you will gaze upon them with eyes of love, they will grant you immortality. They will free you from all material distress. That's a fact. I'm saying, Mike, what is this stupid bus? They didn't list the temple in their tour, you see. What is this stupid thing? At least it should be one of the stops on the tour. Then it'd be worth $35. If they had Radha Gopinath Darshan as one of the 30 stops on the hop-on, hop-off bus, you see. What I'm saying is not simply some sentiment, you understand? This is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita by Krishna. Abrahma bhuvana loka punaravartinarjuna mam upechirukonteya punarjanmanivijate. Krishna is saying, even if you take a hop-on, half-off bus all the way from Brahmaloka down to Patalaloka, seeing 3 million sights in this material world, there's nothing worth seeing you, Krishna says. Even in Brahmaloka. Because this is a place of misery wherein repeated birth and death take place. But Krishna says, one who comes to my above, punar janma nividyate, he never takes birth again. He doesn't have to take another body that gets sick, that gets old, and that dies. You understand? He achieves immortality. Immortality. You know what immortality means? It means no death. That's what it means. You don't ever die. You live forever. You never die. So, one who can see that form of the Lord, who can take the darshan of the deity form of the Lord. In India, this is still very popular. There are thousands and millions of temples all over India. People know that darshan. It is so valuable thing. But you know, actually, what is the real meaning of darshan, Prabhupada? Not that you go to see the deity. You go to present yourself before the deity so the deity can see you. That is actual darshan. But now, my Lord, I've come to present myself to you as your devotee. You see, that is real darshan. I've come to offer myself to you. That is actual darshan. You see? You understand? That you go to, so the deity can see you. Now they have come to surrender to me. You see, that is actual darshan. So, as soon as we come to the deity, in this mood, then we achieve immortality immediately. We revive our consciousness. I'm not this body. I'm the eternal servant of Krishna. My only business is to serve God 24 hours a day. You understand? So, the point is, we should not be carried away by the false propaganda of this material world. Simply false propaganda. Come here, come there, enjoy this, enjoy that. You will not find anything enjoyable in this material world. It is Martya Loka, is a world of death. And that is not enjoyable for an eternal being, to be stuck in a world of death. It is not enjoyable. You cannot enjoy this material world. It's not possible. We think we can enjoy, but that is our foolishness. That is our illusion. There is no enjoyment here. I don't care how much money you have. I don't care what kind of position you have. I don't care how much power, prestige, or what family members, friends, whatever you may have in this material world. At any minute, the material nature can pull the rug out from under you. It is not a secure position. Therefore, it is not a happy position. But if you can take shelter of Krishna, who is the original source of your existence, if you can reconnect yourself with Krishna or God, then you will find a happiness which is so sublime, which is so sweet, so nectarian, so oozing with so much oozing with unlimited oceans of juice, that no happiness of this material world, even magnified by millions and billions of times, who compete with the smallest, most insignificant fraction of the happiness that you can derive from loving Krishna or God. This is the actual message of Indian culture. India is 99% forgotten this now. Only the 1% remains. That 1% is very significant. But India now has become 99% covered by the material nature. Western advancement is the desire for happiness. But here, where the Western advancement is already there, the people are depressed. There's a huge problem of depression and suicide here in Australia. You see, this material progress has not brought them that happiness. So, it is nothing wrong with having some material comforts. We are not saying that is wrong. You have your material comforts. But understand that more important and absolutely essential is to revive your lost loving relationship with God. That is the most essential. So our humble request to you is that you kindly utilize your human life to reestablish your relationship with God. Don't simply spend all of your energy for material progress. That is my request to you. Don't spend all of your energy for material progress. Spend as much energy as possible for spiritual progress. Because that will give you true happiness. Material life will always be up and down, just like the recession now, you see. Material world will always be up and down. Sukha dukkha. That is the nature. Krishna says in the Gita, Matra spasha stu konteya. Shitoshna sukha dukkha da agama payano nityosh. Tangsta tikshash vabarata. The non-permanent appearance of happiness and distress. You see. Boom and recession. This is just like the chains of the seasons. Whenever there's a boom, you can understand there will be a recession. Every time the summer comes, we know the winter is coming. Every time the winter is coming, we know the summer is coming. There's no such thing as the eternal summer. It always goes in cycles. So there's always going to be recession, economic boom, recession. It's always going to be in cycles. They have this idea, well, we can manipulate the economy to where we have a constant boom. You can't do that. It's against the laws of nature. They will never create an economy that's constantly booming unless they make it purely Krishna conscious. And then it will boom. It's the only way. You have to have a transcendental economy. That's the only way. Then it could be. Where everyone just offers everything in Krishna's service. Then there could be unlimited prosperity. That's a fact. If it's all for Krishna. And it's all being offered in His service. Then it becomes transcendental to the material nature. As long as we're within the material nature of trying to enjoy this material energy, sometimes we can enjoy a little bit, and then we have to go down again. Sometimes we come up and get a little enjoyment, and then down again. That's the nature of the material existence. So please try to understand these sublime teachings of Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. Please connect yourself with Krishna through chanting His holy names. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Whatever you eat, make that as an offering to Krishna. Throw all the meat, fish and eggs out of your house. They're not offerable to Krishna. And whatever you eat, offer that food to Krishna. Your fruits, your vegetables, your dairy products, your grains. Offer them to Krishna. How? Bhaktya, with love. If you will offer with love to Krishna, in this way, if you give yourself to Krishna, then Krishna will give Himself to you. And when Krishna becomes your property, you become the wealthiest person in all of existence. So we're asking, we've come here today to request you all that you give your, please give yourselves to Krishna. Whatever you eat, offer it to him first. Whatever you do, do it with love for Krishna. In this way, your lives will become perfect and happy. So I can ask if there's any questions now. Yes.
Thanks for the lecture. The initial part, you mentioned that we cannot enjoy, and whatever happiness we have, it's very limited. It kind of presents a very negative picture, and when we present this, people say, oh, you always tell this, and you are like a saddest set of people. You can't enjoy, and you are asking us not to enjoy. So how do we tell them that this is not the right way? Because they experience instant happiness, but when it comes to Krishna consciousness, they say, okay, I have to go through the process, then I'll be happy. So,
yeah. You Hare Krishnas are telling us we can't enjoy this material world. What are you offering us? But you're not offering us any alternative. Actually, our program is not to take away their material happiness. Our program is to give them a superior happiness. You want to enjoy, okay, come on. We will give you a way that you can expand your enjoyment, increase your enjoyment by you already have an ocean of unlimited enjoyment there by your very nature. You, without any external trappings, you can actually taste unlimited ecstasy at every minute. Because you haven't connected with your own true nature, therefore you're trying to get it in so many external things. Television, radio, sex pleasure, eating, money, traveling, so many things. You're trying to get the pleasure through external things. But actually, nothing external is even required. Because you already have an ocean of unlimited transcendental bliss within you. All you have to do is be yourself, really. We're just teaching you how to reconnect with the unlimited ocean of bliss that you have right now, right there in your heart. And the most powerful way to immediately connect with it is the chanting. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. We invite you to join with us in this kirtan. If you will open your heart and open your mind and join with us in this kirtan, you can taste great transcendental pleasure that far surpasses any pleasure you've ever tasted in the material existence. Even in your greatest hours of material pleasure, you can taste in this kirtan a pleasure which is 1,000 times greater than any pleasure you have had in your greatest moments of material happiness. So in this way, we want to give you this opportunity to taste this most wonderful happiness that exceeds any happiness of this material existence by thousands and millions of times. Does that answer your question? Thank you for pointing that out. Because someone may think, oh, he's so heavy. I mean, my goodness. He's taking away all my pleasure. I can't enjoy the opera house anymore. I can't enjoy the Sydney Harbour anymore, the city skyline, the Sydney skyline. What's he doing? He's just taking away all my pleasure now. Well, there's nothing left. Yes.
You mentioned in the beginning of your lecture you can experience immortality by, you know, going to Krishna consciousness. Why would you want to hypothetically experience immortality?
Why would you want to hypothetically experience immortality?
No, well, not hypothetically.
Yeah, okay, but why would you want to be immortal?
Hypothetical means it's imagination. Or I agree with you. Why would somebody want to hypothetically enjoy immortality? Because it's not really real, it's just hypothetical. It's like saying something, just imagine that you were immortal. I mean, what good is hypothetical pleasure? It's like, just imagine that you just won the lottery. You see? Can you spend the money if it's hypothetical? So if you can you enjoy immortality if it's hypothetical? No. You know, you're standing before the firing squad. Well, just imagine that you're immortal. What good does it do you? You see? So yes, hypothetical immortality is useless.
Okay, so my question is, why would you want to become immortal?
Why would you want to become immortal?
Oh, yes. Well, all right, that's a very good question. Why would one want to become immortal? Some people say, well, life just isn't worth it at all. I'm going to jump off the bridge and commit suicide. I don't want immortality. I don't even want to live for another 5 minutes. I just want to merge into the void. Forget it, you see. That's called voidism or impersonalism, you see. Voidism, yes. Who wants immortality? Life is so miserable, I don't even want it for another 5 minutes. Forget it. But the fact is that actually we do exist eternally. Like it or not, it's confirmed in Vedic wisdom that you travel within this particular body, and then when it's your karma to leave, then you go to another body. So immortality, whether you like it or not, you already have immortality. Now, if you're not happy in your present condition living with immortality, then you need to find a way that you can live in immortality happily. Right now, are you happy?
Temporarily, yes.
Temporarily, yes. Now, what will bring your happiness to an end? Why do you say temporarily?
Well, a family member could die, or whatever could happen. Family member might.
Because they can die or.
Yes. It's like you may be happy now, but then some terrorist comes in and says, all right, we want to wipe out all you Hindus, you know. Allah Akbar, either take Allah or take the machine gun. Your choice, you know. So, yeah, so why not get a happiness then, which cannot be interrupted by death, you see. That's called superior happiness. Inferior happiness is temporary happiness. Right now you have inferior temporary happiness. We can teach you how to taste the superior eternal happiness. Vamasaukam tvanantam, Bhagavatam describes. That happiness which goes on increasing eternally. Spiritual happiness. Material happiness is limited. It's temporary, therefore it's not pure happiness. Any happiness which is tinged with the anxiety of losing it in the future, like having a young, healthy body, for example, that's not pure happiness, because that's going to get an old, that young, healthy body becoming an old man's worn-out body eventually. So the happiness of being a young man, that's a temporary happiness. So, but eternal happiness is to realize I'm not the body. And to make your happiness based on your relationship with the Supreme Person, the source of all existence. That happiness is eternal. And that happiness is called Krishna consciousness. So we are teaching you not theoretically, but practically, how to situate yourself in a happiness which is beyond the pains and pleasures of your material body. How to experience a happiness in relationship with the Supreme Person who is the source of all existence. That happiness will simply go on increasing throughout your whole life, even as your body becomes worn out and old and less pleasurable. it'll be counteracted by the increasing Krishna consciousness within your heart. To where you can become even more happy when you're an old 80-year-old than you were when you were 20. You'd be full of energy. Even an eight Papa was an 80-year-old man. He had showed more energy than his 20-year-old disciples. Because he was identifying as the spiritual self within, not the external body. So, it's not theoretical. It's practical. It's real. Because when you revive that consciousness of your eternal nature, then you tap into a pleasure which goes on increasing, increasing, increasing each day as you absorb your consciousness more and more in Krishna. Sometimes people say, what does it mean to absorb your consciousness in Krishna? I think we've all experienced going to a cinema. Don't we sometimes be so absorbed in a movie that you, when it's over, you forgot you were in Sydney? Wow, I thought I was in Tahiti. Now here I'm in Sydney, and you come out on the street. Wow, I thought I really felt I was in Tahiti. You get so absorbed in the movie, you forget, you see. So we teach you how to become fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness, where you never really touch down and enter this material existence again. You remain in that transcendental existence. It's like you get absorbed in a movie, which is make-believe. We teach you how to get absorbed in Krishna consciousness, which is real. This material existence is actually the movie. Actually, this is the movie. Australia, Sydney, Earth, planet, this is a movie. What lies beyond the movie is your eternal identity as a servant in the Supreme Person. That's what lies beyond the movie. So we teach you how to connect with your actual identity, which is beyond the movie of this material existence. And we have different films, you know, just like you go to see this cinema, then that cinema. All right, this cinema, you're such, you know, such and such guy here in Sydney. Next, you know, then you go to see another movie where you're some woman in America. The next, you know, is one movie after another movie, lifetime after each lifetime is a separate movie that you're seeing in the cinema house of material existence. You understand? So why keep floating around the cinema house in this artificial reality when you can actually come out of the cinema house and come into a reality which is millions of times better than the celluloid reality, if they still use that. They still use celluloid?
Yes.
In the theater house? You never know, the technology is always changing. You give an example that may be 20 years old. The celluloid reality is of material existence. Does that answer your question? Yeah. So what do you think about this Krishna consciousness? Concept.
Yeah, I'm neutral about it until I try it out. I can't really.
What is he saying?
He's neutral until he tries it.
This is new?
He's neutral.
Neutral. Yeah. Well, that means you're open-minded. That's very good. That means you're intelligent. Have you read this book, Bhagavad Gita?
Bits and pieces, some of it.
Please read the whole thing cover to cover. Give it a complete, honest, open look. Cover to cover. Start with page one and go all the way through. Because I guarantee if you give a complete, total, thorough examination, you're going to go, wow, this is amazing. Right now you've been dabbling. The beautiful lake is there on the hot summer day. You've been dipping your toes in it. Now jump in and go for a good swim. And you'll go, wow, this is amazing. This is absolutely. Okay, next question.
Regarding the question that you asked, we say that we don't want to be immortal, but yet, when someone wants to kill us, we don't want to die. Nor do we want to naturally die. Why is that?
Yeah. When you cross the street, do you look both ways for cars, or you think, well, I don't care if I get hit? No, it is our. We are always looking how to be immortal, how to avoid death at every step.
Sometimes
that's a fact.
Realize it, that we really want to not
That everyone desires immortality. Because our actual nature is we are immortal. That's the thing.
So one could also argue that it takes one speech to survive. Like, because human instinct would tell you, oh, you're going to die, don't do this, you know? Like, your reflex would be to jump out of the way of the moving car. Even though you might want to really die, it's a reflex.
And why that reflex?
Yeah, that reflex is a natural manifestation of your desire for immortality. It's not something that you were trained to do by society. You were born with it. The survival instinct is there in every single species. When I was a young kid, I used to camp out in the Boy Scouts. And we would go in the forest, you know, for camping out. And even the trees have the survival instinct. Because some parts of the forest, the tree needs the sunlight. That's his source of food. He's fed by the sunshine and also by the soil. He gets two types of food. Sunshine is one of his important sorts of food. He gets fed by the sun. And I saw one tree that had been somehow born, you know, taken root as a seedling in a place where there was a heavy forest cover above. There was no light coming through. So you know how that tree grew? They usually grow like this. It was amazing. This tree grew like this. The trunk went parallel along the ground until it got to a point where there was sunlight and then it went up. It's amazing, a tree like this. Because that there's a living entity in that tree. He has an instinct for survival. And he knew there's no, it's too dark here, let me. And he had the brains to know. It shows that they're not dumb. The trees have some intelligence. He could understand where the sunlight was. I mean, which direction would you go? There's 360 degrees. Why did he go that direction? The tree had the intuitive intelligence to understand if he went this direction, that was the short, he actually went the shortest distance to where the sunlight was available. He had that innate intelligence by the presence of the supersoul within the heart of the tree. And he went to that area and then he grew up. So in every species, just like an ant walking on the table, you can go like this and he'll avoid your finger. Though this, maybe he's going to crush me, you see. So every living entity, because he is actually eternal by nature, he does everything he can to avoid death. Because death is unnatural for the living entity. It's natural for the body. Material bodies are born, they get sick, they get old, and they die. That's natural for a material body. But for the living entity, the jiva, who's the passenger or the driver, passenger and the driver of that body, it's unnatural. Because jivara svarupa hai krishnara nitya das, the constitutional position of every living entity is he's the eternal servant of Krishna. So every living entity tries to avoid death by nature. So, do you want to avoid death?
Yeah, for now.
For now.
Yes. So, chant Hare Krishna. Practice Krishna consciousness. Are you here alone or with your family? Oh, this is your father. Oh, very good. I didn't know this was your son. This is the first time he's been in one of the programs that I give. Previously. Does he live here with you? I'm very happy. First time I'm understanding that I'm talking to your son. That's very nice. Very nice. I didn't know he was your son. That's very nice. He's an intelligent boy. Okay, any other questions?
Reflecting again on negativities. someone has a boil, you blow on the boil, oh, it's all right, you are happy. Is it that a very good thing, or you can say, is that very intelligent? That it's everything is all right, or is it better to take a pin or something to operate the boil and get it better?
Sometimes it is said, no pain, no gain. Especially in weightlifting, they say that. They also say that when you go for acupuncture. That's actually, or it's true in so many ways in life, you see. To do some initial austerity to achieve that which is ultimately the most beneficial thing. So, any good thing that you want to achieve requires some sacrifice, some austerity in the beginning. Just like a college degree, for example. Or just like if someone says Australian culture is very wonderful, just think of the austerity of the original people who came here. And there's complete wilderness. You see? So, to achieve something which is a very good thing requires always some austerities. So we shouldn't shy away from austerities. Austerities are, Krishna describes in the Bhagavad Gita that austerity is the wealth of the Brahmins. The more that one can take austerity for awakening his divine consciousness, that is his wealth. You see, that is his greatest wealth, his greatest asset. Does that answer your question?
I was reflecting on his question, negative, the people may think it's negative. So we may see it's negative, and that rabbit or somebody? That is there and closes his eyes and I'm happy. So is that very intelligent?
Death?
That is standing in front.
Yeah.
And he closes his eyes.
Oh, the rabbit.
Yeah, the rabbit.
Someone said, well, don't be negative. I mean, come on, let's say be positive about everything. And they say, but don't you see, my dear rabbit, that death is coming right now, that the fox is coming. Death is coming in the form of the fox to eat you. Now, don't be negative. Come on, the rabbit says to his friend, his rabbit friend. I don't want any negativity. I'm just going to close my eyes and not worry about anything. You see, and then the fox comes and goop, gobbles him up. You see, his so-called, I don't want anything negative, don't give me any negative things, I just want to hear positive things only. You see, I close my eyes to any negativity. But actually, if you let's say you had a doctor, and your doctor always told you, oh my dear patient, you're in perfect health. Would you like to have such a doctor? No matter what, you could be healthy or sick, it wouldn't matter. He'd tell you, you're in good health. You could be dying of cancer. But he wouldn't want to make you feel bad. He'd say, oh, you're in perfect health. He could look at your, put you through the scanner and see, oh my goodness, he's got cancer. He's got 3 days to live, but I don't want to upset his day. You know, you're in great health. So is that the kind of doctor I'd like to have, Dharmesh? That everything, my dear sir, you're in very good shape.
You say he likes to know the truth.
Yeah, we want to know the truth. So the Hare Krishna people, they're telling us the truth. But people don't want to hear the truth. They want to be like the rabbit and close their eyes. And death is getting ready to pounce on them and every minute. And they say, well, come on, don't spoil my day. I'm enjoying the opera house. I'm enjoying the hop-on, hop-off tour of... Sydney, gawking and gaping at all the skyscrapers in downtown Sydney. So The Hare Krishna people are not negative. We are the most positive people, actually. There's nobody more positive in the whole world than the Hare Krishna people. That's a thing. We are the most positive. But we're also the most honest people. Because we tell you frankly, you won't find any happiness here. You can go all the way from the opera house up to Brisbane, and all the way up to Cairns, and you know, all the way up to Taiwan. I don't care where you go here, even all the way up to Siberia. You're not going to find any happiness in this material world. Zilch. It doesn't exist here. Doesn't. So are we being negative? No. We are being the most positive people because we're freeing you from the illusion that you can enjoy false happiness. And we are giving you the real happiness. Anandam bhudi vardhanam. We are giving you an unlimited ocean of ever-increasing happiness. Is there any material thing that can give you an unlimited ocean of ever-increasing happiness? Is there? What about family life? Is it an unlimited ocean of ever-increasing happiness? No, it's not. There's so many turmoils in family life. Conflicts. Isn't it? Oh, ho, ho. So much turmoil is there. If you want an unlimited ocean of ever-increasing happiness, simply re-establish your loving relationship with Krishna. So, does anybody have any other questions?
Why do God go through life and death process when He wants us to be immortal?
Why did God put us through the birth and death process when He wanted us to be immortal?
Yes. Very good question. Thank you very much. Why does the government build prisons when they want you to be a law-abiding citizen? Why does the government build prisons when they want you to be a law-abiding citizen? Are they encouraging you to become a criminal by building the prisons? They're doing it because they know some of the citizens will end up becoming prisoners, I mean criminals. So we have to imprison them. So God gives us the choice of loving Him or rebelling against Him. Now you could say, well, why does God give us the free will to either do the right thing or the wrong thing? Why does He do that? Well, that's His magnanimity. That is His being magnanimous. Because if God forced us to become, you know, obedient to Him, that's like being a prisoner, you see, in a slave camp. That God forced us to always obey Him. But can you love somebody that's, let's say I put a gun in your head, and I made you, everything you had to do was under, I said, okay, now do this, do that, do this, do that. You are fully obedient. I said, you one slip and I'm pulling the trigger. Okay, now you can go to the toilet. Now you have to come out. Now you can eat. Now you can't eat. You do everything I say or I'm pulling the trigger. You see, if there's no freedom, is that love? No. So God loves us. Therefore, He gives us the freedom to act in a way that is pleasing to Him or in a way that is displeasing to Him. I'll get to you. That is His love. So, if we choose to act in a way which is independent of God, not for His pleasure, then He gives us a place where we can do that. That is called the material world. Where here you can even say there is no God. There's millions of atheists here in Australia. You can join an atheist society if you want. Where everyone says, yeah, those religious people, those Christians, those Hindus, those Muslims, they're all stupid people. They believe in God, you know. How stupid they are. You can sit around and laugh at the theists. So this is actually God's grace. He gives you a choice. And he gives you facility, whichever way you want to go. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, but how do you know if there's a God? We never saw him anyway.
How do you know if there's God? We never saw him anyway.
Oh, okay. How do we know there is God? Well, there's a number of ways. The first way is to understand is have you ever been to China?
Nah.
How do you know? Do you believe that China exists?
Yeah.
How do you? What makes you believe that China exists?
Because there's a map and it's a map.
How do you know the map is not a fake? Do you have any proof?
Satellites.
Huh?
TV and satellites.
Oh, TV, satellites. How do you know it's not just done in the studio or by computer and graphics? Sophisticated computer concoctions. Do you have any proof that it's not just some concoction?
It's not only him who is working for it, but millions of people who are seeking for the same information. They would be traced back as well.
Because it's not only just millions of people are watching
and they also... Oh, millions of people all believe that it's real. Do you realize that there was a... back during... In the 50s or late 40s in the U.S., there was a radio, a very popular radio show in America. And... They played some story about an invasion of planet Earth from outer space. And they did it in such a way that it was real, and millions of people all over America were convinced that the aliens had invaded the Earth. It was just a story, but it was told in such a way on the radio that everyone thought it was a news report. The aliens have come. You can look it up in Google and read the whole story of how it happened. It's there in Google, you know, on Wikipedia. One of the most humorous things from American history. Thousands and millions, literally millions of people, some people committed suicide. They thought the aliens had come to take over the Earth planet. Millions of people believed that the aliens had actually come. So just because millions of people believe something doesn't make it true. So people have been to China. So how do you know they're not lying?
They have evidence. They have been placed, like, if one person is going, he's been followed by 10 people. That way it is like...
They have evidence.
What evidence is there?
Like, you are lying.
What's the evidence?
Everything you are speaking is lying.
He says the evidence is, if one person goes, about 10 people are following that person, so everybody knows that China is
exactly.
Oh my.
No.
But how do you know they didn't conspire to fool you? The whole thing was a conspiracy to fool you.
There are chances that I might go and see it as well.
Now, if you personally went, then you know it was real, wouldn't you? If you personally went, then you would know actually it is real, there is China. But if you personally don't experience it, how do you know the people are not hyping you? It wasn't a conspiracy. But if you personally experience China, then yes, you can say it. So we will teach you how to personally meet God. And then you will know, you see. We will teach you how to personally experience God. Yes.
Yes, sir. Let me ask this question. How do you say it? He asked a good question. Why did God put us in the situation where we're given a choice and everything? And you made a metaphor where, like, it's like, why did the government make prisons if they want you to be law-abiding citizens? I was just wondering, like, if you think about it, the problem with that metaphor is that, like, it's like we were brought up in prison and we have a choice to free ourselves, if you know what I mean. There's a difference there. Like, the government didn't...
Well, you don't remember your previous life, that's the thing.
Yeah, but, like, it's like if you said, why did the government make prisons? The difference here is we're actually, like, raised in the prison, we were brought up from a small... The default state is the prison.
Well, in a prison, you have a choice of either cooperating with the system and getting out, or not cooperating and remaining in the prison. You have a choice.
Yeah, but we were like, we didn't have the choice to like be brought up in the prison. We were raised in the prison. You know what I mean? Like, we were born into the prison.
Yeah.
So that's kind of, you know, that's a bit weird.
Like, yeah, but you don't, actually, you simply have forgotten. You actually, it's not that you simply are here by chance. You are here by dint of your previous activities.
So you're saying that my previous life put me in this prison.
Material life is a prison, and you're in this prison because you qualify yourself to be here.
How do you already know we were born before? Like,
how does one know?
And you're going to have a future life.
How do you know that you were born before and you will have a future
yeah.
life? Also?
Yeah. Well, if you want to know absolutely for sure, we will teach you, we will take you into that other dimension, and then you will experience it personally. That's one way. When you actually enter into the immortal transcendental existence, it's like going to China. When we take you into that immortal realm, and you actually can live there and be there and experience it firsthand, then you know it's real. Until then, well, do you trust your travel agent? And he tells you, I'm going to take you to China, you know. You have to find a reputable travel agent that's certified by the Australian government. You know what I'm saying. So just like you would look for a reputable travel agent before you shell out, you know, $2,000 for a tour of China, you know what I mean? You find somebody that's a reputable travel agent. He's certified by the Travel Agent Society. You went to his office, you met him, he looks honest. You know what I mean? You have to use your intelligence. He doesn't have shady eyes, he doesn't look like a rip-off artist. You know people that have done business with him before and they enjoyed the China tour, etc., etc., etc. So in the same way, you have to find a tour operator who will take you across to the other dimension. Qualified, that is called the spiritual master. He is a person who is specially empowered by God to take you into that other dimension, that immortal dimension. So if you can find such a certified person and that you can reasonably trust as you would the travel agent, then ultimately, to some extent, there's always a gamble. You take a chance. You're 99.999% sure, but you don't. The last 0.001 is not really wiped. Can't be. You know, is not fully wiped out until you become perfectly realized. When you actually end up in China, then you know that you're there. You see.
What God is telling himself. God is telling you that previous birth, you have this birth, you have
this. Isn't it also scientifically been proven that anything in emotion, just like from child, baby to childhood to youth to old age, that when anything is in motion, yeah, goes in emotion.
Yeah, how do you know that something exists beyond this body? Well, you could take Newton's law of motion as a principle for proving an existence beyond this existence. Because I've existed as a baby's body, and then as a toddler's body, and then a little tyke's body, and then a teenage body, and a youth body, a middle-aged body. There's a momentum going there. The law of motion, Newton's law of motion, whatever is in motion tends to stay in motion. So if, according to Newton, I've moved from, you know, infant to toddler to tyke to teenager to youth to middle age, there's a momentum going. That, according to Newton, that momentum will continue even after leaving this body as an old man. According to Newton's law of motion, there has to be something. Since I've been moving forward all this way, I continue moving. Now, Dharmesh, you had a question.
I was just qualifying the same and similar kind of justification for that question.
He was qualifying for the similar kind of justification.
So according to Newton's law of motion, there has to be something out there. Because all this momentum is there, momentum will continue, according to Newton's law of motion. Of course, there are many other evidences as well. There's a natural intuitive sense. Another example is this. You get thirsty, don't you? Yeah. So, and water exists also. The hankering for a thing, and that thing, we don't have any hankerings. Every hankering that you may have, there's some object to satisfy that hankering. That's by nature's way. For thirst, there's water. For sex pleasure, there's the opposite sex. For, you know, any desire we may have, nature has provided a way to satisfy that desire. So who can deny that there is a hankering for immortality? That, as I gave the example of the tree. You can scientifically analyze, you see. If for every hankering you have, there is something which gratifies that hankering, then there must also be something which gratifies the desire for immortality, and that is immortality itself. So therefore, immortality, scientifically speaking, immortality must exist just as water exists, just as food exists, just as sex exists, as everything else exists that we hanker after. Immortality must also exist. That is scientific analysis. To say that there's an object of gratification for every desire I have except for this one. That's fanaticism. That's fanaticism. That we're going to make a thing against immortality because, you know, well, we don't want to be religious. I really don't want to be spiritual because that's not cool today in the modern day world. No, you're being dogmatic. Scientific means if it's true in 99,999 cases, it's going to also be true in the 100,000th case. That is scientific. That is empirical analysis. You understand? According to the scientific principle of empirical analysis, if something is true in 99,999 cases, it is acceptable that it will be true in the 100,000th case. That's their whole basis of modern-day empirical science. They can't look at every single occurrence of a phenomenon. But they examine so many of them that we have understood a principle. Did Newton look at every apple that disassociated itself from an apple tree? How do you know there isn't one apple that went the other way? You understand? But yet Newton's law of gravity is accepted, even though we haven't studied every single apple. Then every one went the opposite direction, through the heavens, you know, when it disassociated from the tree. So in science is accepted. If you analyze enough cases of a phenomenon, then it becomes a universal principle. So for every hankering, there's an object to gratify that hankering. There must, in millions of cases, there must also be something to gratify the urge for immortality, and that would be immortality itself. So we have proven scientifically the existence of immortality. But if you're still skeptical, then we have a program that will actually take you. If you're still a non-believer, then you sign up for our program, and I'll personally take you to that place of immortality. You can see it and experience it if you want to come. I will take you to that realm if you want to come. That is called disciple. Guru disciple. You become my disciple, I will take you to that realm. And then you will experience it. And you will know. Absolutely, you know. Yes, this is real. It's not hype. So, anything else?
Yeah, if there's animals, all right, they're lions. What if we wipe up all the lions on Earth? What happens to them?
If there are like a species of lion, if you wipe up all the lions, then what will happen?
Lion of what?
Lions.
Yeah, what will happen?
Animals. Lions.
If you kill all the lions?
Yeah.
You've got no chance of coming back now.
You can never wipe them all out.
Yeah, but still, think about it. We wipe them out.
Just think.
Because there are millions and billions of planets throughout the universe. This Earth is just one little tiny planet out of millions and billions. These species are spread throughout the whole universe. Vishnu Purana states, Jaladana valakshani stavara lakshavinshati kramaya rudya sankhyaka pakshinam dashalakshanam trinchalakshani pashavaha chatur lakshani manusham. It lists thousands of years ago, the great sages listed exactly how many species there are in each category. Jalaja, what does that mean? Jala is water, ja means birth. What type of living entity is born in the water? Fishes, the aquatics. Jalaja, how many lakhs? Nava lakshani, 900,000 species in the water. Jalaja nava lakshani. Stavala, what does that mean? Those who stay in one place. The trees, the plants, you see, stavara lakshavinshati, what is that? 2 million? Yeah. Stavara lakshavinshati, krimiya rudra. That means the insects and the reptiles, you see. Krimi, the insects. Krimiya rudra sankhyaka, 1,100,000. No? No. Krimiya rudra sankhyaka, pakshinam dashalakshanam. Darshana, that's 10 million, 1 million types of birds. So these are already there. They're built into the material nature. These numbers of species are built into the material nature by God's arrangement. So even if you go and try to wipe out a species, you can never do it. There's no such thing as a species going extinct. It just means the botanists don't see it anymore, that's all. That's their ignorance. There's no such thing as a species going extinct. It's one of the myths of modern-day science, you know. Oh, this many species went extinct. That means you haven't seen them, that's all. With your limited perceptual power, you have not seen. That doesn't mean they're not there. You have not seen, that's all. The lions will always be there, the tigers. Why? Because there are certain living entities who developed the mentality of tiger. There must be the body of tiger waiting for them. And what is that mentality? Want to eat that flesh. Flesh and blood. McDonald's hamburgers. They'll become tiger. You see? You want that blood? You want to enjoy the blood? All right, now you become tiger. All right, any other questions? Yeah.
Is it like, you must have heard about the population explosion, the poverty all over the world. So is it like we do not think about it, we do not think like it would be destroyed later on, or it's just a matter of changing one life to other, or was the poverty or the population as much as it is today, previous as well?
He says the population explosion.
Yeah.
There is so much poverty. So the it will gradually go down, or it will be remain as is it still the same as previously, or is it go down?
The number of living entities in the existence remains constant.
So we do not think about it, or we do not need to take care of it, is it?
So we don't need to take care of it?
The scientists and the sociologists, etc., they have misanalyzed the problem. Misanalyzed it. They say the problem is overpopulation. But actually, it is not the overpopulation is not the problem. The problem is mismanagement.
Okay. I do agree about that.
If we can, because we're not managing the resources properly, therefore there are people are being pinched. It is simply due to mismanagement. Not the Earth planet can easily maintain 10 times the present population with no problem. Because, just like in America, they grow huge quantity of grains, and then instead of lowering the price on the market, they dump it in the ocean. I saw in the newspaper one time when I was in India, coming back to America, there was a huge abundance of navel oranges in Southern California. So instead of feeding these oranges to the poor, they let them rot, so the price would not go down in the market. The businessmen don't want to lose their profit. They want to make more money, more money, more money, more money. So actually the so-called overpopulation problem is due to greed. What is this?
The book. Who will get the book?
Oh, okay. I better let them do that and then we'll talk. Because I don't want to... If people's consciousness is somewhere else, I want to waste my breath. I'm talking, but in their mind, no one's listening. Everyone's going somewhere else. I think maybe it's a good time to end, and everyone seems to be ready for some action now. Enough philosophy. All right.
What do you mean by greed, then?
What do you mean by greed?
Greed means the desire to acquire unlimited amount of material opulence beyond what you need.
That's what it is.
Greed means, so you have certain needs to be healthy, you and your family. That is all right. You're entitled to take what you need to be healthy. But if one wants more than they need, that's called greed. Gandhiji, he said, the world has enough for everybody's need, but not enough for everybody's greed. Just like you can put out... You can throw some seeds on the ground and the birds will come and eat what they need and fly away. But if you put a bunch of sacks of rice out in an open area somewhere and let everyone come and take, some man who will sneak in the middle of the night with a big truck, you put all the rice in his truck and drive away and then sell it to make a lot of money, not thinking about, you understand? That's called greed. If the government says, okay, we're going to have free rice in the middle of the village, so everybody, every family in the village can have sufficient rice. So they put 10,000 bags of basmati rice in the center of the town. You know, everyone can come and take the rice you need. But then some man will come with a huge truck and he'll take 10,000 bags of rice and then sell it at a big profit. And this way, that's called greed, you understand? Instead of thinking, let me just take what I need, he takes what other people need and then uses that to exploit them. That is called greed. Is that clear? All right. Okay, so we thank you all very much. Everyone satisfied? So kindly take this pathway of intelligence. It is called Buddha Yoga. Krishna consciousness. This is the pathway of intelligence. Kindly take this pathway and make your lives happy and successful. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Hare Krishna.
Srila Prabhupada ki jai.